Hello, I'm Rhea Blakey for Discovery Health. Our topic today is the diagnosis and acute treatment of migraine headache. I'd like to thank the University of Virginia for accrediting the program. I'd also like to thank GlaxoSmithKline for providing the educational grant to make this program possible. I'd like to remind physicians and other healthcare professionals that you can earn free CME credit by registering online at discoveryhealthcme.com and taking the post-test. All the slides, references, and graphics from today's program will also be available online. It's easy to log on, take the post-test, and earn credit for the program, so do it today. We're fortunate to have a distinguished group of experts in our panel discussion today to discuss the diagnosis of migraine and current evidence regarding pathophysiology and treatment. Dr. David W. Dodick, Professor of Neurology, Mayo Clinic, Scottsdale, Arizona, and President-elect of the American Headache Society. Dr. Elizabeth Loader, Chief of the Division of Headache and Pain, Department of Neurology, Brigham and Women's Hospital, Associate Professor of Neurology, Harvard Medical School, Boston, Massachusetts. And Dr. Stephen D. Silverstein, Professor of Neurology, Thomas Jefferson University Hospital, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. During the next hour, we'll review the following: the epidemiology of migraine, the socioeconomic effects and medical comorbidities associated with migraine, the diagnostic criteria for migraine. We'll explain current understanding of the pathophysiology of migraine, including the concept of central sensitization, and review pharmacologic approaches to acute migraine treatment. Dr. Dodick, we'll start with you. How common is migraine?
Well, migraine is very common. It affects about 12% of the U.S. population. And just to put that into perspective, that's more common than if you combined diabetes and asthma. So it's more prevalent and more common than both of those disorders combined.
So migraine's common in all age groups and in both sexes, but it's really helpful to remember that it's especially common in women during their reproductive years. In fact, in both sexes, it's more common during the middle years of life when people are otherwise very busy trying to raise a family, work, and establish a career. So it has an impact above and beyond even its very high prevalence.
So how much of an impact does migraine have on patients' lives, and what's its cost to society?
The World Health Organization does analyses of how disabling disorders are. They claim that migraine, and I believe them, is the most disabling disorder known to mankind. During a migraine attack, a patient has as much disability as somebody who's schizophrenic or is paralyzed in their arms and their legs. Overall, migraine is the 20th cause of disability in the world.
And the impact is not just during the headache. I mean, many patients are significantly disabled during a headache. Over half of people with migraine, for example, require bed rest during a headache. They're not up and functioning. They're actually in bed, unable to function. And many of them say the pain is at least moderate or severe. So the attacks themselves are very significant. But it's important to remember that many patients who have recurrent episodes of headache come to learn that they can't be depended upon to get to social activities or work functions. They start to worry about that. They won't make plans ahead of time. And there's a lot of disability in between attacks that's substantial for people who just don't know how they're going to cope with their next attack.
Yeah, absolutely. It affects every aspect of their life, not just their health-related quality of life, but their social, emotional, occupational well-being. It also affects their employment. A patient who suffers from frequent migraine attacks or disabling migraine attacks will often have to take time off of work, or even if they tough it out and try to go to work, they're not very productive when they're there. So it has a significant impact sometimes on their ability to maintain gainful employment, and it has a significant effect on their employer.
Are there other medical conditions associated with migraine?
Yeah, migraine often travels along with other conditions. We know, for example, that psychiatric problems like depression and anxiety are more common in people who have migraine, and a whole host of other conditions that either commonly coexist with migraine or are more likely to be present in people who have migraine.
It's extremely important to make the distinction between migraine as a symptom of depression and depression as an independent disorder. If you have migraine, you have double the triple the risk of developing depression. If you have depression, you have double or triple the risk of developing migraine. What does this mean? You don't have migraine because you're depressed, but you have a greater likelihood of developing depression because you have migraine.
Yeah, and I think one of the new things that's emerging in the migraine field is not just treating the disease itself and worrying about the disease progressing, but also thinking of migraine as an indication that there might be other health problems. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of emerging information about migraine, particularly migraine with aura, raising the risk of ischemic stroke. And there's some preliminary information about migraine as a risk factor for cardiovascular complications. And beyond that, women who have migraine with aura probably are at higher risk of experiencing certain pregnancy complications, particularly preeclampsia. So all of this is really changing the way that we view migraine. It's not just an inconvenience, a harmless condition, but it may actually be an indication that you need to look further and think about risks for other serious problems.
Well, we know physicians like to learn from patient cases. A correct diagnosis of migraine can make. We met with one of Dr. Silberstein's patients, Pat, from Levittown, Pennsylvania.
I just started getting these headaches. I don't exactly remember what triggered those headaches. It might have been stress, it might have been a smell, it might have been some type of food that I had eaten. I don't remember what it was. I would get throbbing pains across my forehead and top of my head, like the tips of my ears would be throbbing. I would get sick in the stomach, like I was going to throw up. And I couldn't stand loud noises or lights. I would go into a dark, quiet room. No lights, make sure the blinds were down, the door would be closed. No sound whatsoever. A cold cloth over my head. Sometimes a cup of hot tea would help, and then just wait it out till the pain went away. The first doctor that I went to, he says, oh, it's stress from your job. I was a librarian. I would have to leave school. I would have to use one of my sick days because I had such a bad headache. The next doctor told me I was too fat. So he said, well, maybe if you lost some weight, your headaches would go away. The third doctor knew my husband, and he knew my husband was a football coach. He says, well, maybe if your husband didn't coach so much and he would stay home and help you with your children, you wouldn't be stressed out. I think that had to be the worst excuse.
It was very hard for her to function as a mom. The kids would know that mommy has a headache and don't bother her now and be quiet. You know, sometimes I'd take them to the mall or do other things away from the house so that she would have time to recover.
When I would see my mother experiencing severe headaches, I really didn't understand what was going on because I was a child. It makes you feel really helpless and sad.
The fourth doctor referred me to the dentist because he said I was grinding my teeth. And he made me the apparatus that goes in my mouth. And I wore that for God knows how long until we discovered that it didn't work. I went to doctor number 6, and we did several tests, and we came up with something called triggers, which we found caused my headaches. And he had asked me if I had heard of something called a migraine. And I told him I had heard of it, but I didn't know what it was. He asked me if I would try this type of a medication, So we found that this type of a medication worked. And if I was in a married woman, I'd kiss the man.
Patients with migraine are frequently misdiagnosed. First and foremost, people attribute the symptoms to something else, like sinus disease or tension or stress. Secondly, many people who have migraine don't have the aura. In the absence of aura, which occurs about 80% of the time, patients are misdiagnosed.
It was like a godsend to have this medicine to help me get rid of the pain. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Mom.
Before, I was almost trapped. Now I had almost like a lifeline.
Since my mother was diagnosed with migraines and got on treatment that actually helped her, she's been a completely new woman. She's got more energy. She feels better about herself. She's overall a more fun and outgoing person than she used to be.
Basically, I felt like my whole life had changed. And now I had a name for my headaches. I had a migraine.
It's very important to realize what my patient went through. She was never diagnosed, and she was blamed for her headache. She was too fat. She was under too much stress. Her husband didn't pay enough attention to her. She had a neurological, biological disorder, and she shouldn't be blamed for living her life.
What I thought was interesting was how well that showed the impact her migraine had on the entire family and the disruption it caused over many, many years.
Absolutely, you can see the impact of misdiagnosis, but you can also see how gratifying it can be from a physician's standpoint to see the positive impact that you can have on not only the patient's life, but everybody around that patient. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes a physician is not in the house like that to see that kind of positive impact. So I think treating migraine can be very gratifying, as you can see.